Climate experts have asserted that today's children will not be able to escape the effects of climate change, and that South Africa is simply not prepared.
They're going to live in a world which today's adults have never experienced, because they're going to be having these types of storm events on a much more frequent basis. So if we look at the stats from the KZN event right now, it was something like over 600 schools which have been damaged. It's not just the sort of physical damage and trauma and loss of lives, but there are a whole lot of longer term events. Food security is going to be compromised, so kids are going to suffer from hunger and malnutrition. And those compounding effects on physical well-being will also be compounded with the mental trauma of having lost family members, themselves maybe have been injured, the trauma of their homes being destroyed, and now the fact that they can't go back to school, that they don't have food, and that the adults who they rely on to look after them and provide for them aren't able to do so. They simply don't have the resources. And that the government, which should be supplying the disaster relief, is just completely overstretched, unable to supply what's needed for the numbers of people which need it. So there's going to be both the short-term physical traumas of the event and then these longer-term stresses of the inability to simply bounce back from these extreme events.
After South Africa experienced devastating floods in KwaZulu-Natal, which decimated public infrastructure, resulting in billions of rands worth of damage, displacing thousands and leading to the death of 435 South Africans, President Cyril Ramaphosa visited the flood-stricken areas. During his tour, Ramaphosa said that the flooding was a clear result of climate change and that South Africa would need to up its disaster response.
People have died, our people are injured, so this is a catastrophe of enormous proportions. This disaster obviously is part of climate change. It is telling us that climate change is serious. It is here. We no longer can postpone what we need to do, the measures we need to take to deal with climate change. It is here, and our disaster management capability needs to be at a higher level.
According to the Center for Environmental Rights' climate advocacy lawyer, Brandon Abdenor, and environmental futures and strategist, researcher and consultant, Professor Nicholas King, the president could not have been more right. While King explains that it is not yet possible to conclusively say that the storm which caused the flooding in KwaZulu-Natal was a direct result of climate change, he also adds that the extreme nature of that storm and the unprecedented toll it took on the province definitely is.
The storm itself is not attributable to climate change. We have storms, we know that. But the extreme nature of the event, where I think the stats was 4 months worth of rainfall in a 24-hour period, we could certainly most likely attribute that to climate change. So I think very likely that the extreme nature of the storm is attributable to climate change, no doubt about it.
Having done significant research and modeling on the subject, King outlines the dramatic impact climate change is going to have on Southern Africa in the coming years.
We have a very variable climate across the subcontinent. The eastern half is pretty sort of hot and wet. And then as you go over the escarpment to the western side, it gets increasingly hotter and drier. Overall, with global temperatures increasing, with global heating, everywhere is going to get hotter. And places that are currently sort of wet are going to get wetter, so hotter and wetter. And places that are currently dry are going to get hotter and drier. So basically, the eastern coast, we're going to see more of these extreme events because it's already the wet part of the country. So it's going to get wetter. As I mentioned, as the temperatures rise, there'll be increasing evaporation from the oceans. And so that will be dumped on the eastern seaboard. As we go over into the interior, it's going to get hotter and drier. So you're going to get increasingly less plant growing days. So rain-fed agriculture, for example, will certainly start to be compromised even more than it has now with the multi-year droughts we've been having. And those droughts will become more infrequent, more intense as those temperatures go up. So we're going to see a lot of rain-fed agriculture collapsing. There'll be a lot of demand and then conflict over what water is available for irrigated agriculture in the interior. And we're going to see a lot of conflict between those mega users of water. And again, ironically, those will be things like the coal-fired power stations, Medupi and so on, in places like Lephalale, which are already highly water-constrained areas. And if we're getting to the point where, you know, there's not enough water for domestic use, we're going to see some serious social upheavals and conflicts in those drier interiors. as it gets hotter and drier, increasing wind speeds and so on, we're going to have more fire risk. Those are already the sort of drier savanna areas of South Africa are already high fire risk zones. And we've seen, for example, in the Western Cape, the fire season, you know, the fires are becoming more frequent and more intense. And of course, that's a huge issue with the expanding informal settlements we have in South Africa. Fire risk, incredibly vulnerable. So the Eastern Seaboard, as we've seen in KZN recently, mega flooding events are going to happen more and more frequently. We're very likely to see those cyclones coming down from the subtropical area, Mozambique, Madagascar, further south. And I think the important point here is just that our infrastructure hasn't been designed for these megastorm events, and a lot of it hasn't been maintained very long. So potential for a major dam burst, for example, is huge. But also, you know, what used to be a 1 in 200-year flood, then we built our bridges for those, are now becoming increasingly 1 in 50-year, 1 in 20-year flood. And we're simply not going to be able to rebuild that infrastructure. The coastal area is obviously extremely vulnerable to rising sea levels and storm surges. And so we see places like Durban seafront, which is increasingly getting flooded with what being called king tides and so on. And so one of the adaptation mechanisms they have put in place is to start to try and rebuild the primary dunes along the foreshore to protect that seafront. But you know, South Africa is going to have, with such a long coastline, it's about 3,000 kilometers, we're going to have to seriously be talking about managed retreats from those coastlines.
But climate advocacy lawyer Brandon Abdenor says that despite the near post-apocalyptic descriptions of what we can expect, which includes things like droughts, floods, food and water insecurity, and terrible socio-economic upheaval, South Africa is not viewing the problem as urgent enough.
But I think it's fairly safe to say that there is potentially an adaptation crisis.
While Abdenor does commend the works being done by certain sects of society and says South Africa has a lot of progressive policies in place, the turnaround time and active implementation of such policies does not reflect the reality that the consequences of climate change are not a distant consideration, but are now on our doorstep.
Climate change adaptation is really taking measures to counter the impacts of climate change that are definitely going to happen, regardless of how well we mitigate and reduce emissions. And here we're looking at very practical things. For example, there will be informal settlements on floodplains or at the bottom of hills, and this is what we've seen in Durban. There is the susceptibility to fire in informal settlements. We're looking at things like the impacts on food. So we've heard from Nick now that there's going to be pressure on growing days as a result of reduced rainfall. We need to be looking at what alternatives we can put in place in terms of ensuring food security. And one of the problems, it seems, is that the urgency of the situation is not really reflected at government level. We had a National Climate Change Response white paper come out in 2011, which supposedly set the scene for our climate response. And then in 2019, a National Climate Change Adaptation Strategy was released. This is very much a policy document. It's very high level. It does map out in very broad terms what needs to be done, but it hasn't really seemed to filter down into the sort of nitty-gritty detail that we need to see. Our climate change bill has recently been tabled in Parliament, and that is supposed to be dealing with adaptation, among other things. But in the bill, we see a serious lack of urgency. For example, municipalities, who, as I say, are in the front line, are not required to submit their response plans for a full 5 years after the Climate Change Act comes into being. And that is not reflective of the urgency of the situation. We need particularly local government to be capacitated and resourced to do this. And that starts off with having the knowledge. We need to see a lot of consultation in this process. We can't have adaptation done to the people. It needs to be a bit more collaborative than that. And we need to see the political will behind this. We need to see these actions getting urgently taken, measures being put in place, and straying a bit into the mitigation side, the political will. While some of the right things are said, we're still seeing the Department of Energy wanting to procure new coal-fired power. We're still seeing the Messina-Makata Special Economic Zone going ahead. We're still seeing more exploration for hydrocarbons off the coast. So really, we fragmented and we're not pulling in the same direction, and that cohesion really needs to happen. Climate change is a slow onset event in a sense, and it's obviously been creeping up on us slowly. But I think we can definitely see the trends that these things are becoming more often and more intense. So it does take some foresight to put some of these things in place, but here we go. We've seen 443 lives lost. We know that the fires are a problem every season. We haven't really seen food shocks as a result of climate change per se, but that's going to happen at some point. And once it does, it's really difficult to address. So a little bit of sort of proactive thinking and acceptance of the science is really essential here.
King reiterates that same call for urgency.
Urgency can't be overstressed. I mean, we're in this already. You know, it's not just something that's looming in the future. We're in climate change at the moment. The planet is more than 1 degree warmer than the pre-industrial average. And we're seeing these events all over the place. I don't think we can sort of say, look, we've got any time, because it takes time to build infrastructure. You know, we should have been building the infrastructure 2 decades ago. We're already way behind the curve. We keep putting out this information. We keep improving the information. We get better and better at it, but we don't get the required responses. There's no sort of 30-year bridging or using gas and la, and it'll all be nice and fine, and by 2050, we'll be sort of better off. We just do not have the time to do that. We have to change direction 180 degrees right now. And again, that comes to that urgency that we mentioned.
For more information on the impact climate change is likely to have on your future and the future of your country, we recommend further reading of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, research reports and research done by the Center for Environmental Rights. For Times Live Podcasts, I've been Paige Muller.